This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I am your host, Tim Murray, keeping true to our word, another podcast in your feed for another week, 5 weeks in a row. Let's keep it rolling. Continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. We've had some great guests already jump in on the pod, and today, no different. Looking forward to catching up with Paul Stone, professional handicapper. He will jump on the podcast. We'll talk Big 12. Very fascinating conference this year, obviously, with Oklahoma and Texas departing to the SEC. The newbies, most notably Utah, coming in to potentially win this conference. Arizona State, Arizona should have a good team this year. Colorado back to the Big 12. Coach Prime, wherever he goes, you know it's going to be an interesting time. So a lot to get to with Paul Stone. We've got futures bets, win total bets, also scheduling situational spots, and we wrap up talking about a week one bet that he has made as well. So looking forward to having that conversation with Paul Stone. Let's continue to rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Love the comments that have been coming in so far through the first four. We will probably start to do a little bit more of the conference specific discussions as time goes on. And oh, by the way, the conference we're about to talk about, the Big 12, what's the latest news here? That they might be the all-state Big 12 conference. So things are getting a little weird with the Big 12. Who knows? I know a lot of people believe, and you're probably right, that we are headed inevitably to two monster conferences, the Big 10 and the SEC. But for the time being, the Big 12 still has a seat at the table, and that's what makes this conference so fascinating, in my opinion, this year, when you think about the structure of the college football playoff, where four teams get byes, but you have to be a conference champion. So, based off of most people's power ratings, you look at Oregon, Ohio State, Georgia, and Texas in some order, only two of those teams are going to get byes. So, that opens the door for the Big 12 champ, for the ACC champ to get a bye into the quarterfinals on either New Year's Eve or New Year's Day. So Paul Stone, the conversation with him coming up momentarily, but I wanted to start the podcast today talking about Notre Dame. And yes, I'm a Notre Dame fan. I think many of you know that, but I think for the most part, I keep it pretty real when it comes to the Irish. And I would say even more pessimistic than it is optimistic. I have had future bets on Notre Dame. I did have a Sam Hartman Heisman Trophy future last year for 25-1. Obviously that did not come home, but this year is pretty interesting for the Irish. And I've seen a lot of people talking about their schedule. I think rightfully so. There's some criticism to be had. Notre Dame did have a game with Miami of Florida, pulled out of this year's schedule, pushed back to 2026. But you look at the schedule this year, and according to Bill Conley, it is the 51st most difficult schedule entering the season. Phil Steele in his magazine, 57th is where he rated the Irish's schedule. And normally, to be honest, it's in that top 25, not usually top 10, but usually in that top 25 range. You think back to last year playing Ohio State, NC State, Duke, Louisville, USC, Clemson. Those are all challenging games. And Notre Dame ultimately with a win total of 9, landed right on 9, went 9-3 just a year ago. And thinking back to last year, comparing it to this year's schedule before we jump into the personnel front for the Irish and how I ultimately think we can attack Notre Dame from a win total perspective, is last year Notre Dame started in week 0, went abroad to Ireland to play Navy. They played 8 consecutive games to start the year, and you started to see the attrition of that schedule show late in the month of September and into early October. So Notre Dame started last year 4-0, beat Navy, beat Tennessee State, beat NC State as a pretty popular favorite on the road there at NC State, laying 7. That was the weird rain delay, thunderstorm delay game, and Notre Dame was able to win that game by 3 touchdowns, and then beat Central Michigan. Then they got into kind of the nuts and bolts of the schedule, where it was a stretch of Ohio State, at Duke, at Louisville, USC. All four of those teams at the time they played them, I believe, were ranked. And Notre Dame lost on the last second touchdown to Ohio State. Still don't want to talk about that game. Then they beat Duke in the closing seconds on a touchdown from Audric Estime. Remember, that was like a 97-yard drive in Durham. Sam Hartman converted a 4th-and-16, and then Audric Estime was able to run into the end zone the following play. And then from a scheduling standpoint, brutal spot against Louisville, night game at Louisville. Jeff Brohm's squad, who's always known for pulling up big-time wins. Ask Ohio State about that when Brohm was the head coach of Purdue. And Louisville put it on him as an underdog in that spot. And then Notre Dame was able to beat Caleb Williams and USC. They also lost on the road at Clemson. That was the infamous Tyler from Spartanburg game, where he called in the plant into Dabo Sweeney's show. So Notre Dame went 9-3 last year, right on the number. Some disappointment, certainly. Some positive victories when you look at USC. But let's look at this year's schedule for Notre Dame. Win total 10.5, depending on what shop you're looking at. At Texas A&M week one, they're a one-point underdog or a pick 'em, depending on where you look. Home to Northern Illinois. At Purdue, one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. That's a 3:30 Eastern game, not a primetime game. 3:30 Eastern, very easy travel to get to West Lafayette. Home to Miami, home to Louisville. Louisville this year, I don't know if they'll be as good as they were a year ago. They do bring in Tyler Shuck to be their starting quarterback. So that'll be kind of an interesting one to see from Louisville. But you think about this, they're right now, Notre Dame is a 9.5-point favorite in the game of the year lines. And they're going to have revenge on their mind. This is not going to be a spot where you're going to overlook a Louisville team that beat your butt last year. So I think this is an opportunity for the Irish to, get some revenge against Louisville. Then you hit a bye week. Then you play Stanford, Georgia Tech, and Navy. Georgia Tech and Navy both are neutral site games. Georgia Tech at the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, and Navy at MetLife Stadium. Another bye. Then it's the biggest game of the season. November 9th, you're taking on Florida State at home right now, game of the year line. You're a 3.5-point favorite. Home to Virginia, neutral site against Army at Yankee Stadium, and then at USC. And when you look at USC's schedule, open up at LSU, open up against LSU in Las Vegas. Very challenging schedule there for USC, and who knows through the attrition how they'll be by the final week of the season. So realistically, if you're looking at point spreads, anything under a touchdown, there's three toss-up games for the Irish this year. And this is year three for Marcus Freeman. This is a very important year for Marcus Freeman. Historically, third-year head coaches at Notre Dame have done well. Brian Kelly led the Irish to the college, to the national championship. That was the infamous Manti Te'o season, where they got absolutely hammered by Alabama in the national championship. Lou Holtz won a national championship in his third year as the head coach at Notre Dame. So there's some history on their side. And Notre Dame, from administrative standpoint, is seeming to be all in on this Notre Dame team, on the Marcus Freeman era. They are spending big on their coordinators. Al Golden, 4-year, $9 million contract, which puts him up there as one of the highest paid coordinators in the country. And then when Jared Parker left to go to Troy, which every Notre Dame fan might have gone to South Bend to pack his bags for him, they went out and got Mike Denbrock, who has been to Notre Dame before, was the offensive coordinator there under Brian Kelly, left to go to Cincinnati when things went awry in 2016. And now he's come back after a stint at Cincinnati, 2 years at LSU, was the architect of that offense with Jaden Daniels last year. And they went out, spent big money to get Mike Denbrock. Same contract as Al Golden, reportedly, 4 years, $9 million. So they're paying their coordinators. They're buying in to the Freeman era. They're paying big-time players. They went out and got Riley Leonard. They've gotten other pieces in the portal. Now, are they at the level of Miami? No, not necessarily. But when you look at this roster and how it's constructed versus how it was constructed a year ago, if not now, when? You know, this is, I always listen to Pete Sampson, who covers the team, and his line is, what are we doing, right? What are we doing here? If this isn't a playoff team for the Irish this year, it's going to be looked at as a big disappointment. And when I look at the construction of this roster, when I look at that schedule that is seemingly very manageable from how it's set up, doesn't seem to be too many landmines. Could Georgia Tech on a neutral in October be a little tricky? I suppose so. Virginia, but that's a senior day. I think Notre Dame will certainly be up for that. I don't think Purdue's very good this year. You've got really four big games they're going to make this season, and you're going to be a favorite potentially, depending on how Texas A&M closes. You might be a favorite in all of them. So Notre Dame is going to be a favorite in minimum in 11 games this year, barring catastrophic injury. Let's look at the makeup of the roster. Mention Riley Leonard coming in. Riley Leonard is an upgrade over Sam Hartman. He's much more athletic, and I think he fits the Mike Denbrock mold very well. For Notre Dame to go get Riley Leonard, had a really good year 2 years ago, started the season with that upset win over Clemson. Then he got hurt against Notre Dame, ironically enough, and that derailed the whole season for him. He was a little bit banged up in the spring. However, from all accounts, full go. He's going to be ready to go from the start of fall practice here. He was on campus this past week, looked totally fine. So you got Riley Leonard there at the quarterback position. There's excitement in the running back room. Jadarian Price and Jeremiah Love stepping in into a bigger role, both on the roster last year. Audric Estime, of course, departs to the NFL, fifth round pick, I believe, going to the Denver Broncos, over 1,300 rushing yards a year ago. But Dela McCullough, in my opinion, one of the better running back coaches in the game, and they're very excited about what they've got in the running back room. Here's where I think, from an offensive standpoint, there should be a lot of excitement for Notre Dame, because last year, to be honest, when you looked at the wide receivers that they had, it was not acceptable for a team that, in theory, wants to compete for national championships. What they rolled out there was not good enough, and that was a mistake from a recruiting standpoint at the high school level, was a mistake from attacking the portal, and I think they've learned from those mistakes. Their leading receiver last year was their tight end, Mitchell Evans, who is back this upcoming year, but they went out, they got Chris Mitchell from Florida International, over 1,100 receiving yards and 7 touchdowns a year ago. They brought in Bo Collins, who can be a deep threat, played at Clemson 3 years, over 1,300 receiving yards at Clemson, 11 touchdowns. They brought in Jaden Harrison, who's an elite kickoff returner, returned 2 touchdowns last year, first team All-American, but there's excitement about him being in the slot. Speaking of the slot, Jordan Faison, who just won a national title playing lacrosse, he came out of nowhere as a walk-on, scored a touchdown against Louisville, has true speed, and now he doesn't have to be a main target, but adding into the pieces of this wide receiver room that also has Micah Gilbert, who people are excited about, is a true freshman. Jaden Greathouse comes back from a year ago, expecting to come into a bigger role. And then also Jaden Thomas. Jaden Thomas is a more of a big body, kind of a tight end, wide receiver, hybrid type of wideout, dealt with hamstring injuries all of last year, but he was expected to be the number one, and now he can kind of fall back a little bit. And I thought Pete Sampson, who I mentioned already, put it into perspective on his podcast, where Notre Dame doesn't have a true one, I would say, but they look to have 4 or 5 twos. And then you have in Mitchell Evans, who emerged in some big-time spots against Ohio State, against Duke, had some of his biggest games, tore his ACL during, I believe, the Pittsburgh game, but from all accounts, is expected to be back full go heading into the 2024 season. The question you have to have about Notre Dame from an offensive standpoint, you'd have this new offensive coordinator, Mike Denbrock, where you should be excited. You have a mobile quarterback. The offensive line has questions, and that's usually not the case with Notre Dame. Joe Alt, the left tackle, ended up being the 5th overall pick from the Los Angeles Chargers. Blake Fisher, the right tackle, a 2nd-round pick in the NFL draft. So they're going to have 2 new tackles heading down to College Station in week 1, and that's going to be tricky because Texas A&M has got some strong, strong edge rushers. There's no doubt about it when it comes in, to this upcoming season. So from an offensive standpoint, this offense has the makings to be better. Phil Steele has this wide receiver room as the 10th best in the country. And I think also, if you're wondering about Riley Leonard and the health, And I think that's a fair thing to look at because of how banged up he was his final year at Duke, the fact that he didn't really get to fully participate in the spring and had another cleanup surgery on that ankle. There's a lot of belief in the backup quarterback in Steve Angeli. And I think that's where the fall off isn't that massive for the Irish. And, you know, 2018 was a unique spot where Notre Dame ended up making the college football playoff and they changed quarterbacks. Brandon Wimbush was not accurate enough. They had a couple close calls against the likes of, you know, Ball State and Vanderbilt. But ultimately, they made the change. They went to Ian Book, who was more of a precise passer, fit into the Chip Long offense a little bit more, and they were able to go to the college football playoff that year. Steve Angeli, another year at Notre Dame, played in the Sun Bowl, played well. There's strong belief that he can be a very capable quarterback if they need him to be. But the hope is Riley Leonard can step in and really be a stud for the Irish. The calling card of Notre Dame, though, this year, especially when you look at the quarterbacks that they're going to play, where, you know, we don't know what Mason Miller is going to be, the quarterback of USC, DJ Uiagalelei. How crazy is that? 2020, DJ Uiagalelei steps in for Trevor Lawrence for Clemson. Notre Dame beats Clemson, then the number one team in the country in 2020, and DJU is going to play at Notre Dame in 2024. So he's back. He's at Florida State after a year at Oregon State. But I think when you look at this defense for Notre Dame, you've got Howard Cross up front, who's entering, I believe, year six for the Irish. They were able to keep him, you know, there and really bolster one of the better defensive lines in the country. Riley Leonard there as well. They went out and got RJ Oben to come in off the edge from Duke. One of the biggest keeps for the Irish was Jack Kaiser coming back for a sixth year. Last year, J.D. Bertrand, past 3 years, J.D. Bertrand has been a tackling machine. Jack Kaiser staying there, I think, really helps out Notre Dame from the linebacker core, where he's not going to come off the field. Jalen Snead, a once-upon-a-time five-star, they're hoping he clicks coming off the edge with some explosiveness, and then Drake Bowen, who will probably step into Kaiser's role coming up in the near future. And then they also have Kingston Viliamu-Asa, their top recruit, and he'll probably get some time out there as well. So the fact that Jack Kaiser stuck around is huge for Notre Dame in this linebacker core in a pretty complex defense, coordinated by Al Golden. The secondary is going to be one of the better secondaries in the country, assuming health for Benjamin Morrison, who had offseason shoulder surgery. Benjamin Morrison, you look at some mock drafts, projected to be anywhere from a top 10 to top 20 pick in the upcoming NFL draft. He is the best pro prospect right now on this Notre Dame roster, and he's going to be at one corner. They do lose Cam Hart, of course. He's at Miami. They lose Cam Hart, fifth-round pick, very solid corner, therefore Notre Dame a captain. So a decent-sized loss there, but Christian Gray is going to be on one side. Ryan Clark's son, Jordan Clark, comes into the nickel position. He's been playing pretty well from all accounts during the spring. And then you bring back the Bronco Nagurski winner in Xavier Watts at safety, and you go to the portal and get Rod Hurd, a veteran who's played a ton of football there for the Purple Cats, and he comes into the defense. If you look at some projections from Phil Steele in his magazine, he projects Notre Dame's pass defense to be the second best in the country, scoring defense to be the sixth best in the country, and total defense to be the sixth best in the country. So you're looking at all the makings here, the schedule, the coaching staff, the veteran nature of this roster, a quarterback with an upside in Riley Leonard, a stacked wide receiver room, which they haven't had. Biggest question, which is unfortunate for Notre Dame, is the offensive line, right? Charles Jagasaw is going to be their left tackle. Tosh Baker potentially going to be on the right side. The middle of the offensive line, I think there's belief in it. Ashton Craig sitting there at center. But I think for Notre Dame, you just look at the schedule and you look at this roster and you say 9 wins would be an absolute disaster for Notre Dame this year. And it really would call into question how good of a coach is Marcus Freeman, and how much can you believe in him moving forward as the head coach of Notre Dame? They had their speed bumps in year one, no doubt about it, losing to Marshall, losing to Stanford, I thought they cleaned that up a little bit last year. They were actually one of the better cover teams a year ago. They beat up on the inferior opponents, which they did not do in the first year of the Freeman era, but you need to win those big games. So you've got three toss-up games, in my opinion. You've got Texas A&M, Florida State, and USC. Two of those on the road, but timing, I think, works out well. When you look at the futures market right now for Notre Dame, we had just Bruce Feldman on the last podcast, and he liked the under 10.5, which I wasn't going to push back all that much on because I understand where he's coming from, where there's a very small margin for error when it comes to 10.5 wins. You can only lose one game. And in week one, they're at some books an underdog. So you lose that game and you've got an under 10.5 ticket. You're actually feeling pretty good. But when I looked at the markets, this is what got me kind of intrigued. Now, I did the math. Math, not always a strength. But there's one prominent shop that is offering over 10.5 at plus 138. And then DraftKings is offering exact win markets out there for Notre Dame. To go undefeated, plus 425. 11 wins, plus 330. 10 wins, 3-1. 9 wins, plus 350. So, to channel my inner Mike Palm, where the name of the game is trying to win money, could we create our own over 9.5 win ticket, right? If you play over 10 wins and it lands 10, you get a push, get your money back. So that's kind of a bummer, right? You're not playing to get a push. So what we could do is we could take that unit, whatever your price is, whether it be $100, $300, $1,000, a dime, I'll just use $1,000 just to make it clean. I'm not saying that is what your unit should be, but I was doing the math today, and the way I broke it down, if you took $1,000 and you put $625 of that on over 10.5 at plus 138, that would come out, if they won 11 games or 12, to $862.50. Then you would have to subtract $375 from that. So you would net $487.50 from your two bets, which would equate to minus 205 odds. Then you have the exact bet of 10 wins. So you put $375 on that. Let's say they land 10-2. So you lose your over 10.5 bet at plus 138, but you win your exactly 10 win bet at 3-1. That comes out to $1,125. You subtract $625 from that. You net $500. That's minus 200 odds. So my question, as we go through all of this for Notre Dame, over 9.5 at minus $2, is that worth a bet? I think it is. You know, when you're thinking about the long haul of a win total bet, I'm looking at this schedule. I'm looking at how it breaks down. I would be surprised if Notre Dame landed this year with a 9-3 or worse record. 10, 11, and 12, I think, are the most likely. I would say 10, 11, 12, 9 would be, in my opinion, the most likely outcomes on the year. Just looking at the schedule, the veteran nature, the coaching staff being at year three for Marcus Freeman, two veteran coordinators in Al Golden on the defense and Mike Denbrock on the offense. Mike Denbrock's working with Gino Gaudule, who he worked with at Cincinnati as his quarterback's coach. He's working with Mike Brown. He's working with a veteran running back coach in Dylan McCullough. And then on the other side of the ball, Al Golden, year three, Mike Mickens is a very hot commodity as a defensive backs coach. They lost Chris O'Leary to the Los Angeles Chargers. But if Notre Dame wins 9 games, it's a serious disappointment. And lastly, I'll say this. To make the college football playoff market, yes is minus 165, no is plus 130. Why I personally would stay away from this market is I think Notre Dame is in at 12-0. I think they're in at 11-1. Are they in at 10-2? I don't know. If Notre Dame loses to A&M loses to Florida State, is the committee really going to look at that resume with maybe no wins over top 25 teams at the end of the day and say, yeah, come on in? I think it's pretty tricky for Notre Dame. So I would personally stay away from the college football playoff market. Lastly, too, Bill Conley, he projected Notre Dame to go 11-1 or better 44.4% of the time. And the FPI for ESPN also said Notre Dame, I think it was 15.6% chance of them going undefeated. High expectations. I think Greg McElroy said it best. The pressure in game one at Kyle Field isn't on Mike Elko. It's on Marcus Freeman. And Mike Elko, to me, was a great hire for Texas A&M. And I think Notre Dame, to be honest, is getting them at a very good time when you think about game one as opposed to maybe later on in the season when Mike Elko has it rolling around. All right, we'll hit on that game with Paul Stone on the other side of the break. This is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. And as promised, college football handicapper, professional handicapper, Paul Stone joins us here on the podcast. Always great to have Paul back on the pod. You can follow him on Twitter at Paul Stone Sports and check out the website, paulstonesports.org. Paul, a little birdie told me, a.k.a. my co-host Jonathan Von Tobel, you were in town. I missed you. I missed you in Vegas, but you were bouncing around making some game of the year bets. So you're getting ready for the college football season.
Yeah, I tell you, first of all, great to be on with you, Tim. I always love talking college football, especially in mid-June. But I got to Vegas this past Sunday morning and stayed a couple of days, actually left early Tuesday morning, but made some more game of the year bets. And I guess as of right now, I probably have about 25 or 30 total bets on either games of the year or regular season win totals. So the betting season well underway for myself and really getting excited. You know, it seems like it's still a little bit in the distance, the start of the college football season on August 24th. But you know as well as I do, it's going to be here before we know it. So just an exciting part of the calendar for me each year.
Yeah, it's preview magazine season. I've got them all here, and we'll certainly be working on ours sooner rather than later. Let me ask you this, because I got asked this on a radio interview, I would say like 2 months ago, because DraftKings, I believe, was the first to market with their game of the year polls. A couple other shops, similar timing. For you, you know, we were talking off air. You said a year ago, your first game of the year bet was probably in late February. This year, a little bit later, based off of, you know, the portal and making sure all your ducks were in the row. But as a professional handicapper like yourself, how much value do you have to see in a line in order to lock up your money for an extended period of time? Because I think there's a lot of people, Paul, out there from a casual betting standpoint that just don't feel the need to lock up their money for a game of the year line for multiple months. So for you, what has to kind of trigger you in order to make a game of the year bet?
That's a very fair question, Tim. And first of all, you know, it's different for one early in the season rather than late in the season. You know, if you're talking about late in the season, the end of November, that's, you know, two or three more months than if you have a week one or a week two game of the year. So I'm going to need more significant value if it's late in the year. And maybe, I'd say anywhere, just depending on the situation, from 2 to 3.5 or 4 points of what I feel like's value early in the year, and then maybe above 4 points, which is hard to find late in the year. But that's a fair question. You are tying up your bankroll, and in some cases it might be better to have that portion of your bankroll available, you know, for real time wagering as you go along. So certainly there's some considerations there, and you kind of have to balance all those different aspects.
Yeah, and there's no doubt. I mean, you know, this is a college football betting podcast. Many of our listeners are looking to fire on those game of the year pods and our game of the year bets, I should say. And I'm going to close the pod with a bet that I'm really contemplating. And you can kind of look for key numbers and all of that. And is there a discrepancy in the market? So we'll get to that. There is a game of the year game I want to get to in just a little bit. And we're going to hit on some situational spots because you and I were texting a couple weeks ago about some unique situational angles. I mentioned a couple from the American Athletic Conference a couple pods ago, but I wanted to have you on to talk Big 12 and what a unique year it is, Paul, for this conference, where last year I think I got Texas at maybe plus 120, and I felt like that was good value. And at middle of the season, it didn't look so great, and ultimately they were able to get the conference championship. This year, completely different, right? Because Texas is gone, Oklahoma is gone. You bring in Utah, you bring in Arizona, you bring in Arizona State, even though they don't expect to be much of a factor. When you look at this conference as a whole, from the futures market, where the shortest odds are, you know, Utah around plus 330, plus 340, depending on the book that you look at. It feels like, Paul, as we head into 2024, that the Big 12 is completely wide open.
I mean, I agree. It's the most balanced league in the country. And I understand, you know, most college football fans, especially if they have allegiances to schools in those conferences, the first thing they think about are those two conferences, the mega conferences, the SEC and the Big Ten. And, you know, the rich certainly have gotten richer the last couple of seasons in college football. But the conference that I'm most excited about this year, both as a fan and certainly a better, is the Big 12. I mean, there's just such balance, as we were talking before we started. There's not maybe a great team in the Big 12, but there's so many good teams. And I think in this 16-team conference with the new additions, I think as many as eight teams really have a legitimate chance of winning this conference. And that doesn't even include Texas Tech and TCU, which it wouldn't be, you know, the biggest surprise in the history of the sport if either one of those guys, you know, had a big year and made a run at it. I think there's going to be a high concentration of games in the Big 12 this year with point spreads of six or less. You never know exactly what the line maker is going to be thinking and where their power ratings are going to rest. But I think there could be some value, generally speaking, in taking underdogs in Big 12 games. And I've, you know, as I mentioned earlier, I've already got several game of the year tickets, and certainly some of those are in the Big 12. And off the top of my head, one of those tickets I have, it might be down to six now, but I took Oklahoma State plus seven at Kansas State on September 28th. So this is a conference that's so balanced and provides some interesting betting opportunities in 2024.
I'm curious if you will agree with me on this assessment, because, you know, with the new rules or the new guidelines, I should say, with the college football playoff, Paul, right? We got 12 teams making it. We know there will be four conference champions from the Power Four, and then the group of five champions, so seven at-larges. But my mindset heading into the Big 12 is I don't want to say any value, but I don't think there's much value on the yes to make the college football playoff market. And here's my point. I agree with you that this is going to be a conference that's probably going to eat itself up, right? So when you're looking at Utah, plus 340 to win the conference, they're plus 250 to make the college football playoff. Same with Kansas State in that similar ballpark. I use those two examples, Paul, because I don't think we don't know how the committee is going to make their decisions, but my hunch tells me that it's going to be really challenging for the Big 12 to get an at-large this year, but they obviously are going to be in an advantageous spot to get one of those buys, which I know is an angle that we're going to talk about here momentarily. But would you say there is limited value in the to make the college football playoff market for this particular conference?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, totally. You know, like we talked about, just the balance of the league. It's one thing if you've got a top-heavy conference, where you've got, you know, one or two teams that are clearly, at least on paper at the beginning of the year, ahead of the rest of the field. But in the Big 12, although Utah deserves to be the favorite, and I think I've seen them maybe as positive as plus 340 to win the Big 12, and they're deserving to be the favorite. But at the same time, Cam Rising hadn't played a football game since the 2022 Rose Bowl, the first half when he got injured, a major ACL injury against Penn State. So there's certainly questions as to will he be 100%. And Cam Rising, the running game's part of his part of what he brings to the table. Will he have the confidence to run, and will he have the physical just movement and agility to run. So you might take away, even if he's on the field, he might not be the same guy that he was before. And then they had two other guys on offense who missed virtually all, if not all, of last season, and tied in Brant Keithy and one of the running backs, Micah Bernard. So they've got some questions. And we're basically, I think, they're the favorite just because of, maybe not just because, but I think primarily because of Kyle Whittingham. I mean, he does, he's one of those guys that I like to say does more with less, never going to be high in their recruiting rankings and that type of thing. But I do agree, there's just so many different teams that could win. I think one of the less advantageous markets to enter would be that to make the college playoff market, you know, what you mentioned.
Well, I want to get to Utah in a unique angle and how you're looking to bet Utah. And I think it's fascinating. We're going to go through that. But let's run through just some of those teams, because I agree. I mean, when you look at this conference and the futures market right now, you're going to see differing prices. For example, Arizona at DraftKings is plus 850 to win the conference, but at Circa, they're 13-1. So, you know, as we always say, especially in the offseason, make sure you're looking around if you're looking to get into the futures market. So here's a big difference. DraftKings right now has Iowa State, Paul, at 11-1 to win the conference. Circa has them down at 8-1. And this is a team where got off to a slow start last year, seemed to kind of get things rolling. Rocco Becht is back, and Bill Conley, who we had on the podcast a couple weeks ago, he does his returning production chart. Iowa State, number one in the country in his returning production, 86%, 90 on offense, 90%, 81% on defense. Challenging schedule down the stretch, Paul, when you've got the game against Kansas at Arrowhead Stadium, last two games of the regular season against the perceived top two teams in the conference at Utah and Kansas State. But at that price, do the Cyclones interest you in a to win the Big 12 future?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend three teams splitting a unit, which to me, a unit is what you would normally bet on a side wager. And Iowa State's going to be one of those three teams that I'm going to recommend to split that unit among. And you look at this Iowa State team last year, and I would be interested to look back and see what Bill Connelly had Iowa State on the experience chart entering 2023, because last year they were one of the least experienced teams in all of Power Five. And this year, as you mentioned, according to Mr. Connelly, now they're the most experienced among all 133 teams in the FBS. So all those people got experience last year. Depending on who you listen to, they've got 19 or 20 returning starters. They've got a running back who's going to be a big-time guy, I think. Rocco Becht wasn't expected to be the quarterback last year, but he was definitely serviceable. He'll be better with more experience. And they've got a defense that, besides Texas, was probably the best defense in the entire Big 12 last year. Most of those folks back. So Iowa State at 11-1, I think Iowa State's one of two teams in this conference that I really think are being somewhat undervalued, with the other being Oklahoma State. I think people are kind of just kind of glossing over those two teams, I guess. But certainly Iowa State at 11-1 is a team that I like to split one of the three medium shots, if you will, that I'm going to recommend taking in the Big 12 to win the conference championship.
Well, let's get to the Pokes of Oklahoma State in that 12-1 market. So DraftKings has Oklahoma State at 12-1. This is interesting to know. Maybe you are the reason here, Paul, but Oklahoma State was, I think, 11 or 12-1 at Circa as most recently as last week, and now they're down to 9-1. So clearly some money coming into the futures market on Oklahoma State. You know, we mentioned Iowa State, per Bill Conley, number one in the country in returning production. Oklahoma State, number three in returning production, 90% on offense, 80% on defense. You bring back Ollie Gordon, Alan Bowman playing his, 100th season of college football. And this was a team that I don't think many anticipated to have a big year last year. And lo and behold, what does Mike Gundy do? He finds this team and gets them to, gets them to the Big 12 championship game. They're able to beat Texas A&M, which I know that meant a lot to them in the Texas Bowl. So the only worry, Paul, for me, it's funny, I texted noted and alum of Oklahoma State, Brett McMurphy. I said, why should I not bet Oklahoma State to win at 12-1? He goes, it's too obvious. So outside of that, there's a lot of positivity here for the Pokes heading into this year. You know, challenging schedule out of the chute, right? Kind of the opposite of Iowa State, where you get Utah September 21st, and then they have that Kansas State game that you mentioned you bet in the game of the year market. So challenging out of the gates, but then maybe a little bit more manageable as the season goes on. So what do you like about the Pokes?
Yeah, like you said, much like Iowa State, this is one of the most experienced teams in all of Power Five football. You've got Ollie Gordon II. I mean, that was one of the biggest scores of the offseason, I think, was Oklahoma State being able to keep the portal, vultures off of Ollie Gordon II. I think they had some concerns that he might look elsewhere and might be on somebody else's roster. But having Gordon back, 1,732 yards last year, and that's despite only having 19 carries, a total of 19 carries in the season's first three games. So Gordon hardly played in the first three games, gained 1,732 yards. You got that offensive line back. As you mentioned, you've got Alan Bowman back. I think he's probably older than two-thirds of the quarterbacks in the NFL, but he's still seventh year or whatever, still playing and didn't play for about 2 years at all. So he's an interesting story. And Mike Gundy, I mean, love him, hate him, or kind of be on neutral regarding Coach Gundy. I mean, this is one of those guys, again, who just always seems to get the most out of his players. He's just a guy that maximizes the talent on hand. And I just like this. They've got a guy on the defensive end as well, and his name escapes me. Colin Oliver.
Yep.
I think the guy's a big time playmaker in the front seven. He's played a lot of college football. It's good to have a disruptive guy in that front seven, and Colin Oliver is that. So they're going to be, I think, better on defense. They're very talented on offense, and I like Oklahoma State a ticket. I believe you said it's 12-1 there at DraftKings to win the Big 12 as well.
And then we'll just stick with Oklahoma State. You know, right now the betting market has them, they're over under 7.5 wins. Last year, they had 9 regular season wins. They open up with a challenge, South Dakota State, who is the premier program in the FCS. However, that betting market has moved towards Oklahoma State already, some like 7 out to 9 or so. Arkansas at Tulsa, those two challenging games we mentioned, Utah, Kansas State, and then it's West Virginia at BYU, at Baylor, Arizona State, who's believed probably to be the worst team in this conference this year. We'll see at TCU, Texas Tech, and Colorado on Black Friday to close out the year. So, you know, as we mentioned, you know, the Big 12 is going to be very a lot of parity. But do you see this Oklahoma State team, Paul, getting to 8 wins?
You know, I do. You know, obviously when we handicap these regular season win totals, Tim, one of the primary things that you look at is going to be that schedule,
yep,
as you just went over. Not only the teams you're playing, but where are you playing them and in what sequence are you playing them? I look at this Oklahoma State schedule, and I don't skew things. I mean, I use my power ratings. I've got them favored in 9 games. And that doesn't include its home game against league favorite Utah on September 21st. That should be close to pick. And Oklahoma State could also be favored at TCU on November 9th. So as of right now, I actually make the Cowboys a small favorite over the Horned Frogs there in Fort Worth. It's going to be a clear-cut underdog in only one game all season, that being the trip to Kansas State on September 28th. And even that game, obviously, is winnable. You know, I just see this Oklahoma State bunch as a borderline top 15 team with, you know, 19 or 20 returning starters. And you got Mike Gundy at the controls. So I like Oklahoma State. That's one of my favorite regular season win total bets among power. I've been saying Power 5. I guess now it's Power 4. That's even a term we're going to use. I've got a get brushed up on the new terminology for 2024, but you know, they're just one of my favorite, perhaps my favorite total regular season win total of Power 4 teams.
minus 140 at DraftKings to the over, minus 150 at Circa. Check all your books when you're looking for win totals. A penny saved is a penny earned. So if you can get as cheap a juice as possible, make sure you're able to grab it. A team that I'm really intrigued by, and I'm curious to get your perspective on, is UCF. You know, this is a team last year. I remember betting them in a couple situational spots, one of them being Oklahoma State, where they, I believe, had to win that game in order to get the bowl eligibility, and they just blew the doors off Oklahoma State. So a travel advantage when teams come their way, but a travel disadvantage certainly for UCF when you think about, you know, games that they have to make. And they've got a big one in the non-con at Florida on October 5th, which would be a fascinating one. But this is a team that went out and got KJ Jefferson, the transfer from Arkansas, to come in. It feels, you know, with Gus Malzahn, there is a bit of a boom or bust nature with this UCF team. When you look at the betting market, best number that I saw was around 13-1 at Circa for them to win the Big 12. And you mentioned you're going to split a unit, Iowa State, Oklahoma State. And the third team is the Knights of UCF.
I really like this UCF team, and I really like KJ Jefferson. You know, he's a guy who started 3 years at the University of Arkansas, started a total of 39 games there in Fayetteville, so extremely experienced. He's a big guy. He can run the football. And last year, his numbers obviously suffered, but he was the victim of just a really undermanned offensive line that was just ill-equipped to compete against the SEC defensive fronts. I mean, if you watch many Arkansas games, KJ Jefferson was just running for his life. And at times he looked somewhat deflated and maybe even defeated. So I think a change of scenery is going to do the big man good. I really like KJ Jefferson, a true dual threat guy. And he's got some weapons. I mean, RJ Harvey at running back, one of the most underrated, kind of under the radar running backs, perhaps in all of college football. They add a big physical running back in Toledo's Penny Boone, who ultimately has settled on UCF. So they've got two good running backs, got a slew of wide receivers. I think they're going to be one of the better offenses in all of college football, a top 15 type offense. And much like Kansas, another team that I think could contend in the Big 12, if UCF can get their defense just at a slightly higher level and can come up with some stops and just be, don't have to be significantly improved, but just maybe moderately improved, I think this is a team that could be not only the surprise of the Big 12, but perhaps one of the biggest surprises in all of college football. I really like UCF as a potential surprise team this year.
So this is where it gets interesting, and I can't wait to hear your explanation and how this, you know, how to play this. So the three futures bets you have in the portfolio for the Big 12, Iowa State, Oklahoma State, UCF, all of those are available now north of 10-1. And then there's Utah. So Utah, as we talked about, they're the favorite or co-favorite, depending on how you want to look at it, with Kansas State. And they are a team that is around plus 340 at Circa to win this conference. But Paul, you're going a real unique route. And I think it's fascinating because we talked about how the Big 12 may not be a good bet to make the playoff as an at-large. However, you need to remember this. There's now four power conferences. There's four byes. What's the rule? The top four teams, in order to earn a bye, have to win their conference championship, meaning Oregon, Ohio State, only one of them's getting a bye. Texas, Georgia, only one of them's getting a bye. Notre Dame can't get a bye. So it opens the door for the Big 12 champion, unless you think Liberty, Boise State, or Memphis is going to run the table, which I don't think will happen. Maybe Liberty will, but I don't think they'll be good enough to get a bye. So all that being said, how are you looking to play Utah in the futures market?
Okay, so, you know, obviously we didn't take a ticket, or I didn't take a ticket on Utah to win the conference championship. So now I'm going to somewhat hedge that non-position by taking Utah to win the national title at 100-1, which is currently available at Westgate. And again, these future markets, you just cannot overemphasize the disparity that you'll see from one book to another on the odds. You know, I'm didn't look at a ton of other books because that 100-to-1 jumped out, but I think some might even have them around 50-to-1. So obviously it's substantially higher payoff there at the Westgate at that 100-to-1. But as you indicated, if Utah does indeed win the Big 12, they are very likely going to get one of the four first round byes. So that puts them into the final eight of the college football playoff. And being in the final eight, they'll only have to win three games to win the national championship. Do I think they're going to win the national championship? I really don't think they're going to win the national championship. But I still like them at 100-to-1 to win the national championship because now, and I know this is an ugly word to a lot of people out there, now we're going to enter hedging into the equation. And if you have hypothetically Utah to win the national championship for $100 at 100-to-1, you would win $10,000 if that ticket were to actually cash. But let's say Utah in that round of eight, they're a 6-point underdog to whomever they're playing. At 6 points, the favorite playing Utah, and this is all hypothetical, obviously, they would be about minus 300 on the money line. So you could bet, you know, you can bet $3,000 to win $1,000 if you say Utah's not going to win. And if that favorite wins the game, Utah's, you know, beat in the round of eight as expected, but you win $1,000, you only lose $100 on the ticket to win the national championship. So you've netted $900. Obviously, if Utah wins that game, then you, you know, you would do it again and you might dilute. If they actually made the championship, it would somewhat dilute your ultimate net win, but you just kind of have to figure out how you want to do it mathematically, how aggressively you want to be with the hedging early on, and just how you want to approach it and have a game plan. But I think it gives you a lot of flexibility and a lot of possibility, and that's where I kind of choose to enter Utah into the handicapping equation here.
Well, to your point, very important, right? Because I just looked up Circa on my phone, 60-to-1. DraftKings on my computer, 60-to-1. So as you mentioned, 100-to-1 versus 60-to-1, pretty big discrepancy there. So certainly a fascinating way to look at the market and recognizing, we've talked about how the Big 12, I think, is in a very advantageous spot this year with the Pac-12 going away, Paul, because these rules were initially made when the Pac-12 was believed to still be a conference. So this tactic probably wouldn't be a way to go if the Pac-12 still existed, but the Pac-12 is gone. So it's an interesting way to look because, you know, Boise State, who is the favorite to win the Mountain West, they have to play Oregon. If they lose a game, they're not going to get ahead of Utah, in my opinion. Memphis has to play, Florida State and, you know, all the big boys in the AAC on the road. And then Liberty has the easiest schedule in college football. And I do think that last year's Fiesta Bowl loss is going to be held against them, rightly or wrongly. So fascinating way to look at Utah and how to play the Utes. Another win total to discuss from you in the Big 12. So we talked about Oak State playing the over. With the overs come some unders. And the TCU Horned Frogs are going to open up the season on the road in Palo Alto. They are now a 10-point favorite. So a little bit of money coming in on Stanford, who I believe, per Bill Conley, has the second most production returning. So interesting game in week one, Friday night game there in Palo Alto for the Horned Frogs to go on the road there. Looking at the schedule, you have an FCS opponent, then you're taking on UCF, then at SMU, a pretty darn good ACC team. Remember, ACC this year. You got Kansas on a neutral, Houston at Utah, Texas Tech at Baylor, Oklahoma State, Arizona, and then at Cincinnati. So when you look at the best teams in this conference, many believe it would be just from the odds, right? Utah, Kansas State, Kansas, Arizona, and the only one that they are missing is Kansas State. So challenging year, it looks like, for the Horned Frogs. Win total sits at 7.5, juiced over. So how are you looking to attack the Horned Frogs?
Yeah, I mean, as you mentioned, first of all, that non-conference schedule, they play at Stanford in the opener, at SMU, and then have a home game against FCS Long Island sandwiched in between. First of all, that trip to Palo Alto could be tricky.
Yep.
Troy Taylor, the former offensive guru at Sacramento State, now in his second year, there at Stanford. And, you know, they obviously are not a supremely talented Power Four team. But, you know, that could be a little bit dicey playing on a Friday night in Palo Alto. And if they lose that one, they're really in jeopardy of not winning eight games. So I like the under 7.5 at -130 available there at Caesars. And quite frankly, these are not your 2022 Horned Frogs that won a lot of close games and were able to finagle their way into the national championship game before they got, you know, roasted by Georgia. But last year, I think they kind of returned to earth, so to speak, went 5-7. I just really don't see, looking at TCU on paper, I don't see them being any better this year. I mean, they're playing in a conference that's brimming with top-level quarterbacks. The Horned Frogs simply don't have one. Their quarterback last year for most of the year was redshirt sophomore Josh Hoover, who was not expected to be the starter, but took over for Chandler Morris, who's now transferred to North Texas. But Hoover, he missed spring practice due to injury, expected to be back for summer drills, could be pushed by Vanderbilt transfer Ken Sills. But both of those guys, they've only had lukewarm success at the collegiate level. So they're not going to have top level, top shelf quarterback play. The offensive line is going to have a lot of new faces. They're really going to be relying heavily on the portal, which is kind of a crapshoot. The defense, you know, they gave up a large number of points last year, right under, just a shade under 30 points a game against FBS opponents, 408 yards a game. So the defense wasn't really that good last year. I don't think they're going to be a whole lot better this year. This defense at TCU doesn't look like the defenses that we became accustomed to under Gary Patterson. A probable 3-0 start, but when I look at their conference schedule that you kind of went over, I don't think they're going to be favored in more than three conference games. So I think under 7.5, I think 7-5 would be a really good year, a really good job by Sonny Dykes to go 7-5. So I like the under 7.5 at -130 there at Caesars.
So the most polarizing team, not only in the Big 12, but maybe in the entire country, Paul, is Colorado, and probably will be for however long Deion Sanders is there. You love it. You love situational spots, as do I. I consider myself more of a situational handicapper as opposed to kind of a mathematical handicapper. So I like to sort through the weeds because they are college kids, and, you know, you're going to get up for big games, and sometimes there's going to be a letdown factor. There's going to be a look-ahead factor. So one of the situational spots that you pointed out, and I want you to expound on, is Colorado visiting Colorado State. So this is a September 14th game at Colorado State. This will be a primetime game, I believe, on ESPN. And Colorado, the week prior, will be playing a primetime game on the road at Nebraska, which will no doubt be a very challenging effort there for Coach Prime's squad. Colorado State, on the flip side, opens at Texas. Then they play Northern Colorado from the FCS ranks. So they're going to be geared up. Lost last year in that epic game and in overtime. There was some bad blood between Colorado and Colorado State. So game of the year line at DraftKings right now has the Rams catching 8 at home, Paul. So walk us through this situational spot, Colorado at Colorado State, September 14th.
I'll tell you, first of all, and you kind of went over it and said as much, but that Colorado-Colorado State game last year, won by the Buffaloes 43-35 in double overtime, that was one of the best games in all of college football.
Yep.
Really exciting. Colorado State led by double digits midway through the fourth quarter. Colorado comes back to force overtime and ultimately wins in double overtime, 43-35, and actually stayed up past my bedtime. I get up really early on Sunday morning. I don't watch all the games to the bitter end on Saturday night because I just get up so early. If I'm in Vegas, I'm usually up Sunday morning by 3 or 3:30 to start preparing for the openers that come out Sunday. So that was a special occasion for me. But a great football game. And as you mentioned, this is the first time that Colorado State has played Colorado in Fort Collins since 1996.
Wow.
So they have not. It's kind of an odd situation to have the Rocky Mountain Showdown not ever come to Fort Collins, you would think there would be some state reps that went to Colorado State that might try to rectify that situation. But the last 24 meetings, 19 of them have been in Denver. 5 of them have been in Boulder. So I think it's very important that Fort Collins is finally getting Big Brother to come to their campus. And just a lot of things line up here. First of all, just the talent on Colorado State's offense. I think they can score on Colorado's defense. Colorado obviously is kind of heavily tilted towards the offensive side of the ball. They have an outstanding offense with Shador Sanders, but not so much on defense. Colorado State, their quarterback, Braden Fowler, Nicolosi, very talented, a little bit turnover prone. He needs to clean his game up. In his second year, I think he'll be even better than he was last year. And they've got a top receiver, Troy Horton, their wide receiver. He's not just one of the best receivers in the Mountain West. He's one of the best receivers in college football, has great top-end speed, will be a high draft choice. As you mentioned, Colorado State play in Northern Colorado the week before. They'll have UTEP on deck. So as if they didn't need any more focus in playing the Buffaloes, they're really going to be all in for this game. Colorado, meanwhile, they're going to be traveling to Nebraska, as you mentioned, the week before. And they'll have their Big 12 opener on deck at home against Baylor. So I think it just sets up nicely for Colorado State. I think they can keep this game close. I actually took plus 8.5 at BetGM earlier this week on this game. So I like Colorado State. I think situationally it just sets up really well for the Rams against the Buffaloes.
Well, I want to point one more thing out because I remember last year a very popular play was Wyoming at home against Texas Tech. A unique situation from this, I misspoke. I said that this Colorado State game was going to be on ESPN. Not that it really matters, but it's going to be on CBS. I mean, network television is coming to a Mountain West site. And we saw it last year, crazy week one game. Wyoming wins that one in double overtime against the Red Raiders as 13.5-point underdogs. But, you know, don't overlook the fact that, you know, not only is this a rivalry, but the fact that network television is headed to a campus for the Mountain West, that's huge for that conference. So I think a lot of it shapes up, no doubt. And yeah, I think this spot situationally is great for Colorado State. You know, heck, last year, you know, I thought Colorado State was in a good spot. Remember, there was a lot of talk, a lot of chatter. College Game Day went to Colorado. You know, people thought Colorado was going to mop the floor with the Rams. And honestly, Colorado State probably should have won that game outright, right? So great spot for Colorado State. I can't believe Torrey Horton didn't get poached. That was a huge coup by Jay Norvell to keep him in tow there. Another situational spot that you've pointed out in the Big 12, Arizona, Texas Tech. Texas Tech at Arizona. This is October 5th. So this is the Arizona Big 12 home opener. They start their conference you know, foray, so to speak, at Kansas State, at Utah. So the schedule makers did not make it nice for Arizona to start things off there. But their first home game is against Texas Tech on October 5th. I did not see a game of the year line, at least at DraftKings, but what intrigues you about this matchup on October 5th?
Well, the fact, as you mentioned, I mean, it's going to be their first ever Big 12 home game. So there's going to be a lot of electricity in the air in Tucson. They're going to be off those back-to-back road games at Kansas State and Utah. Important to note, it's kind of odd, and I made an error, and somebody corrected me, and I'd heard it way back when, but the Kansas State game is actually not a conference game for Arizona. That game was scheduled before all this realignment stuff took place as a non-conference game. So I'm certain that that's correct, that this is a non-conference game that they're playing against Kansas State, which is really odd.
Yeah.
But in any event, they're going to be off back-to-back road games against Kansas State and Utah, probably going to be on a mini two-game losing streak. And I really like to take teams, especially good ones, when their back's a little bit up against the wall. Especially when the season is still doable. You know, you're in the middle of the season, you're not at the end of the season when some of your goals have been lost and so forth. So this is a team in Arizona that could be off a two-game losing streak. On the other sideline, Texas Tech likely going to be off to a 5-0 start, but it's going to be misleading. It's going to be against mostly a powder puff schedule, if you will. So it's not going to be Certainly all 5-0 starts are not created equal. I'm projecting this line to be -6, Arizona favored by 6. I think they're going to win by 7 or more points. So I really like, again, the situation here for Arizona, potentially off 2 road victories, playing their first ever Big 12 home game, facing a Texas Tech team that might be a little overvalued at 5-0.
All right, we'll wrap on this, Paul. Great stuff on the Big 12. Week 1, a big-time triple header on ABC. Starts with Georgia-Clemson in Atlanta. Then it goes Florida-Miami, and it wraps up. College game day is headed to College Station, Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I opened the show talking about the Irish in depth, and this is a massive spot for both teams. But for me, I look at the Irish with their schedule. They really need this game. So many storylines regarding this game where you've got, you know, Mike Elko, first game at A&M, former Notre Dame offensive coordinator, former Notre Dame defensive coordinator, you know, his former quarterback, Riley Leonard, now the starting quarterback for Notre Dame. If you want to even go further into the weeds, Colin Klein turned down Notre Dame reportedly 2 years ago for their offensive coordinator position. Now he's at Texas A&M. A lot of new faces down in Aggieland, a lot of familiarity for the Irish. Right now, depending on where you look, Texas A&M -1, Circa has it at a pick. How are you looking at this primetime game in College Station between Notre Dame and A&M?
First of all, I'm going to preface my position, not that I am not confident about that my side, as confident as you can be, but Cal Field is a tough place to play.
Yep.
And it's going to be energized. It's going to be at night. They've got a new coach. You know, there's always going to be eternal optimism when you bring a new guy in. And Mike Elko certainly had success at Duke, although I would add, as a handicapper, Duke didn't really beat a whole lot of the better teams in the ACC. They made a lot of their hay against the lower division teams, if you look at his couple of years there in Durham. But Notre Dame is a talented football team. I think they're undoubtedly, unquestionably a top 10 team. Riley Leonard injured. Ironically, it was against Notre Dame last year when he was playing for Duke. Notre Dame injured him, and now they've paid for at least one of his surgeries. So he apparently is nearing 100% and is expected to be ready for fall camp. But there's still a little bit of a, you know, there's always a little bit of angst when you have a guy coming off a major injury, him having a ankle injury. But Riley Leonard, and I last year made some comments on Twitter and got some people upset, especially after the first two games when he put up huge numbers. I said, Sam Hartman's a good quarterback, but he's not a great quarterback. He threw a lot of interceptions at Wake. I mean, he's a good high-level, you know, quarterback, but he's not the upper echelon. Riley Leonard at quarterback is an improvement over Sam Hartman, a healthy Riley Leonard. I really believe that. Notre Dame doesn't have a whole lot of holes on their roster. They've got a team that certainly will contend for a national playoff spot. And Texas A&M, they've added a lot of transfers. They've had a lot of people leave the team through the portal and a lot of people come in. And although they're highly ranked in a lot of the portal rankings that you'll see put out by different publications and websites, I don't think the portal was all that kind to them. They lost a lot of good players, and some of them certainly addition by subtraction. But some of the guys they have coming in, first of all, I'll start with the positive. Nick Skowerton, who's from the Bryan College Station area, that played the first 2 or 3 years of his career there at Purdue. This guy's a playmaker. He's one of the most disruptive front seven edge players in all of college football. So he's going to be a big-time performer for the hometown Aggies. But they've got a lot of players that are coming from group of five schools and maybe didn't have a significant role or a starting role at a power five program in some cases. And the group of five is not the SEC. The group of five is not the is not Notre Dame. So, you know, you're not in the Sun Belt anymore. You're not in Conference USA anymore. And I think a lot of those guys, you know, you look at their statistics, 75 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 5 sacks. You know, it's not always how you play. It's who did you play? You know, who were you playing against? And I think maybe their portal net effect is a little bit overrated. And anytime I think a head coach is kind of having their unveiling, you know, their coming out party, this is their first, they'll do some dress rehearsals, but this is the first time they're going to, you know, bring the production. in front of the college football world, and it's tough. You know, you don't know. You think you know what you've got. You think you know how guys perform in practice, but when you put them under the lights and Notre Dame's dressed up on the other side, you know, it's a different ball game. So I think there's some adjustment, especially in that very first game for a new coach. And I just think Notre Dame's a superior roster, and I like Notre Dame plus the one over Texas A&M.
Well, Paul, what a great way to end the podcast, might I add, you know, with that analysis of my Irish here. But no, I appreciate it. This is great stuff. Always love picking your brain. Make sure you follow Paul on Twitter at Paul Stone Sports, and check out the website, paulstonesports.org. And of course, you hear him all the time on VSiN. Paul, really appreciate the great insight. It's always great to chat and break down college football with you.
Well, thanks for having me on, Tim. Invite me anytime, and I'll always accept. And I hope everybody has a great summer and is getting geared up for another outstanding college football season.
All right, we'll take a quick break, and we'll wrap up the podcast after this. All right, thanks again to Paul Stone. Really good stuff. Really appreciated that. And he made me happy with Notre Dame, Texas A&M. I'm terrified of that game. I know we did the whole open on Notre Dame, but that game scares the living crap out of me heading into week number one, knowing how much is on the line for the Irish. And it'll be a million degrees down there, humidity, great atmosphere, and Mike Elko's an awesome coach. So that's going to be a challenge, but Paul seems to like Notre Dame in that spot. And if Paul's right, then this Notre Dame team is headed to the playoff. I am convinced of that. I think it all swings on week one there, Notre Dame taking on Texas A&M for the Irish. All right, I want to close out on this. Looking at week one, you know, we talked about some week one bets that Paul liked. Obviously, he likes Notre Dame against Texas A&M. And I asked him, too, about betting in, you know, these game of the year markets. There's one game, and there's a couple, to be honest. You know, I think Stanford taking on TCU is an interesting spot to look at the home dog. But the one home dog that continues to jump out at me is Hawaii in week one. And we talked about Colorado State getting the opportunity to play on CBS and the Mountain West taking advantage of their CBS opportunities a year ago when Wyoming opened up the season with that double overtime win over Texas A&M in an absolute crazy game in Laramie on network television. Well, Notre Dame Texas A&M is the ABC game week one. Hawaii UCLA is the CBS game, 7:30 Eastern, 1:30 Hawaii time. And I don't pretend to be a meteorologist, but my guess is going to be in the middle of the afternoon in late August in Hawaii, it's gonna be pretty warm there for Hawaii and UCLA. And I'm gonna play you a clip from last year. Timmy Chang jumped on VSiN primetime, and this was leading into last year's year number two for Timmy Chang. But I want to play you this clip because he did not hide from the fact that he always knows the point spread.
I think we're picked maybe last by people. And I pay attention. We're 17 and a half, and the line's moving at 18 and back and forth as it goes down in your guys' studio, as well as 3.5 wins, you know, this year. I hear all those things, and I like that. You know, I like hearing them. And I tell the guys, man, that this is where they're picking you at. This is what they think of us as a team. And so it fires my guys up. And my guys don't believe that. They believe they're a good team, and they got to go out there and prove it every play.
So he always knows the number. Right now, Hawaii is a 17-point underdog at DraftKings week one against UCLA. I think that's a massive motivational edge there for Hawaii. They bring back top 10 team in production, according to Bill Conley. UCLA, of course, bringing in Deshaun Foster, an alum. I think it was an interesting hire to go that route when Chip Kelly left late in the offseason to go to Ohio State to be their offensive coordinator. You bring in Eric Bieniemy to be your offensive coordinator. You know, Chase Garbers is going to be the starter back for another year, but Hawaii catching 17 at home week one. This is a team that pulled some outright upsets last year. You know, beat a Colorado State team in the final week of the season when Colorado State had bowl eligibility on the line. Beat Air Force last year at home, catching 17 week one against a new head coach. Oh, by the way, Hawaii will play in week zero. They'll play at home against Delaware State, work out some kinks with the veteranness, and then get to host UCLA on national TV in their first game of the season? I think this is a fascinating spot to look at the home dog in the Rainbow Warriors. Now, I know a lot of us are wishing that this game was at midnight Eastern. It would be that final, you know, get back opportunity. But if you can get that 17, which is still available at DraftKings, I think it's a very good look to take a look at Hawaii. Bringing back Braden Schrader. This is a team that, you know, should fight for bowl eligibility. The Bows this year, year three of Timmy Chang, you know, thrust into action year one, had a really tough first season. But last year you saw a little bit, you know, went over their win total a year ago, a team that covered a bunch in his first year, despite not getting a ton of victories, only three. I think they covered nine games in year one. So Timmy Chang, as you just heard from him, he knows the number. And I think he will keep that in the back of his mind as UCLA comes to town in week one there on the island. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. Thanks again to Paul Stone. We will be back at some point next week, hoping to get a big SEC guest. Still working on that, so didn't want to flirt out who that was going to be. But hopefully it'll be a good SEC conversation next week here on the podcast. As always, please rate, review, and subscribe. Tell a friend as well. Let's keep the momentum rolling here this offseason and into the season. But I'm Tim Murray, and we'll be back next week right here on the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.